Nobody gets into maintenance for the paperwork. But somewhere along the way, the clipboards piled up and the spreadsheets multiplied. Good technicians spend hours per day on admin instead of turning a wrench. MaintainX was built to give that time back. Preventative maintenance runs on a real schedule. Automated, assigned, and nothing slipping through. With MaintainX, work orders go out in seconds, and everyone from the floor to the front office knows what's due and when. So your team gets back to the machines, not the paperwork. Over 14,000 companies are already running on MaintainX because the people who keep the world running deserve tools that actually work. Try MaintainX free at MaintainX.com. That's MaintainX.com, an Autodesk company.
Now that the school year is officially underway, families are getting a clearer picture of where students are thriving and where they might need a little extra support. It's the perfect time to reinforce what they're learning in class and build confidence along the way. That's where IXL comes in. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand their schoolwork. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized interactive learning that adapts to each child's unique level and pace. IXL supports classroom learning by providing personalized practice that aligns with what students are already studying. It's proven to improve achievement, with results seen in all 50 states. Plus, one subscription covers everything for all the kids in your home, making it a time-saving and cost-effective choice. It's a resource trusted nationwide, and IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. Listeners of this podcast can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price. I've always dreamed of being able to order my coffee in Italian like a local instead of just pointing at the menu and hoping for the best. There's something about speaking another language with real confidence that opens up a whole new world of experiences. That's why I'm so excited about Rosetta Stone Sapphire. It's their biggest launch in over a decade. It takes that research-backed method we all know and trust and adds fresh, cutting-edge features that make it easier than ever to go from knowing a few phrases to speaking naturally about the topics you actually care about. What I love is that you aren't just memorizing vocabulary lists. You learn entirely in your new language through visuals and audio, just like you did as a kid. One of my favorite new features is chat missions. It turns conversation practice into a game, putting you in real-world scenarios, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions, and giving you missions to complete. You get real-time feedback along the way, so you build that confidence before you ever have to use your skills in the real world. If you want to take your language skills to the next level, don't wait to try Rosetta Stone Sapphire. Listeners of this podcast can get 20% off their Rosetta Stone Sapphire subscription when they sign up today. This gets you access to Rosetta Stone Sapphire in 25 languages. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10 to redeem your 20% off. That's rosettastone.com/rs10.
Anybody, anywhere.
It's time to take command with former NFL tight end Logan Paulson.
This pass caught by Paulson, the tight end.
And from 106.7 The Fan, Grant Paulson.
Welcome into Take Command with Logan Paulson. I'm Grant Paulson. Logan spent a decade in the NFL. You can check me out on 106.7 The Fan from 2 to 6.30 each and every day. The roster was just announced as we record on Sunday evening for your Monday commute. So we want to go through the Commander's 53-man roster in great detail here, try to get into some of the decisions that maybe came down to the wire. But big picture, I would say, I guess storylines include Trey Amos to injured reserve. So he's going to miss the first four games of the season, which feels like a huge deal for a guy that was kind of week to week. You, of course, have Luke McCaffrey, who was battling for a spot, winning out. Wide receiver 7 over Van Jefferson. Ethan Kaliakmanis makes it as a third quarterback. We weren't sure if that would be the case. I don't think there was a surprising cut. The guy that maybe I liked the most that ended up on the scrap heap was Ale Kaho, the linebacker who had a good camp and good preseason. They also had a super heavy competition at D-tackle and a couple guys who balled out in the preseason. You know, Shai Tuttle, Byron Cowart, and Maurice Hurst all got cut. I guess paint with a broad brush, Logan. Your thoughts? Those are some of my initial takes, but what'd you make of the roster formation?
Yeah, I mean, those were all the kind of the big, big major battles kind of heading into that third preseason game. So it's kind of nice to kind of get them all kind of settled. And I do think that it's important to remember that this, while is the initial 53, is not the final 53. Like, obviously, they got to get some guys to IR. They got to kind of probably find some people in free agency after every other team makes their cuts. I'm sure there's somebody that's going to be available. And they're going to kind of finish building this thing out for 2026. That includes not only the 53-man roster, but the guys they're bringing back for practice squad. And so I'm really glad you mentioned Kaho, because he's a guy that, you know, did some good things in the preseason. Not as good as last year, I didn't think. But again, a guy you want in the program, I think, to develop. And I think that's one of the benefits of having this larger practice squad roster, where you can keep a guy like that, you can develop him. But to me, the big surprise in looking at the initial 53-man roster, Grant, is we're just talking about, is the offensive line. I mean, I really am surprised that both those young guys made it. You know, Goldman, I thought, had a really, really, really good camp at center, specifically kind of when he was, you know, in the preseason games. I did a lot of good stuff. Obviously, the joint practice was a little bit up and down for him. But then I think the other guy, Togi, I liked him. I liked how he was playing. I liked the physicality that he brought. But I never thought he'd make the 53-man roster. And I think it just shows you kind of their perspective on the interior depth to keep a guy like that at this juncture. And again, we'll see what happens, obviously, over the next couple of days. But you mentioned some really good ones there, Trey Amos, Luke, AK, all those ones you mentioned. But I do think that that might be the biggest surprise of the initial 53 for me.
Yeah, it's the weakest part of the roster. I mean, just not to sugarcoat it. Like, for Goldman to make it is not a stunner, because he was a draft pick, and their draft picks often make it. But he didn't do anything necessarily that says, I have to be on the team. And then Togiai getting in as a UDFA is even crazier, right? But I think that tells you the whole story there. I mean, I was shocked. We're going to get into each position group one by one here, but just to kind of paint with a big brush on the O-line for a second. I was stunned that they weren't one of the teams that traded for a center today. There were three center trades, and I would have lost a lot of money, Logan, if you told me Washington wasn't one of the teams bringing in a center. Now, I don't know enough about the players that got traded or how much better they are than, say, Julian Good-Jones, who Washington cut, who may end up still in the building on their practice squad. But, you know, I just keep kicking the can down the road and giving Peters the benefit of the doubt here that he's got a vision, he's got a plan, he's going to figure this out. The original thing we heard was that Good-Jones was going to compete with Allegretti for the starting job. And I think we have enough intel now to say that that was never really, whether it was the plan or not, maybe it was not a good plan. It was not reality. And center's really a mess right now. So they have to find someone on the waiver wire. My guess is they've got someone that they're thinking about. Maybe you've already reached out to an agent or whatever, but I would say center's weak. And guard depth is a little bit weak as well. So they got to keep maneuvering there. If you're talking about this being the first of a few 53s, they can't be done on the interior offensive line.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, I went back and I was like, oh, someone good will get cut, or one of these guys traded has got to be a good player. And I went and looked them up, and I think it just speaks to how hard it is to find a quality starting five. You know, guys that have experience, guys that have the physicality, the right makeup. And so, I don't know, I just look at that and I kind of say to myself, like, is it surprising they didn't trade for? Because I will say this about Adam, he's been very selective about people and players that he trades for, and I think in a good way. I think when you look at the free agency period that we just went through, like, he targeted people that fit a very clear defensive vision, and he's not just going to sign kind of someone because it's a desperate need. He's going to be very specific. And so I do think that it will be on this roster that isn't on the roster currently. I don't know who that is, but again, it's just one of those spots right now. And this is just more of a league kind of conversation. Offensive line in general, the development there has been poor, I'd say, for the last 5 or 6 years. And so it's just hard to find like good quality starting caliber people, I think. And so to your point about Goldman, I think he played well. I don't know if he's ready for the bright lights. I think Togiai actually played really well. So he's maybe the most intriguing guy of that group. But again, I think to your point, it just shows that they're not, the lack of depth there is apparent, and they need to figure something out.
But that having been said, you couldn't start Goldman against the Eagles and feel okay about that.
I don't,
right? They need Allegretti to come back, obviously. But like, do you disagree with my point on Golden?
No, that's kind of what I'm saying. I think he did well for a sixth round rookie. I think he did well, but there's a difference between doing well and then starting week one against Philly. And yeah. I think one of the reasons you give him what it was something crazy. It was like 45 reps in the joint practice, have him start every kind of first and second team clip there in terms of the practice is to see what he's got. And, you know, everyone kind of talks about the struggles that the offensive line went through. And, you know, Connerly talked about it. Coleman talked about it, working with new pieces, getting things targeted, the snaps over the head. You can tell the pressure was high. But I'm not saying at some point this year he can't start, but I just would be very, very reluctant, very cautious. Reluctant's the wrong word. Very cautious about starting a rookie center week one against a defense like that. So that's where, like, kind of, and again, even if you did feel comfortable, like, you know, which I guess there is a world because you have another couple of weeks to get ready for Philadelphia where you feel like he's in a good spot and you feel like you can insulate him and you're ready. You just need another spot, you know, because if Allegretti doesn't play and Golden starts, who's your swing interior person, right? I mean, Wiley could probably play guard, but you definitely want, you don't want Togia to do that, right? So there just needs to be another piece here, irrespective of how you feel about Golden at the moment, which again, I think we're aligned there. Like, I would be a little bit, you know, reluctant to start him week one because not because he didn't do the right things. He didn't handle the process well. It's just a big lift for a first year player, you know, first game of the season.
Yeah, I think the interior O-line is where Peters is going to have to do the most and the best work over the next couple of weeks. And one of the things I'll be asking him, I don't know if you know this, but I'm having an event with Adam Peters on Thursday night coming up at Arlington Draft House called An Evening with Adam Peters. I'm hosting it with my co-host on The Fan, Danny Ruye. In fact, if people want to go to the event, tickets are on sale at arlingtondrafthouse.com right now. But it's going to be basically just like an hour plus of Adam talking all about the roster. That's actually what I want to drill down on is kind of what happened, what was the plan, and is the vision still the same on the interior of the offensive line? But why don't we dive into IOL here for a second and just the O-line in general. We're going to go through all the groups after 53 cut down. But Tunsil's going to IR. He's one of the nine for the moment. Brandon Coleman, Chris Paul, Nick Allegretti, Sam Cosmi, Josh Connerly, the five starters, and then Wiley, Golbin, Togiai. So you only kept Wiley, who's tackle guard, flex, Golbin guard, Togiai guard. And I would assume then that DJ Humphreys would be the other one, right? That he would be the extra tackle and kind of the ninth guy. So the question becomes, what are they hunting for? And do you think a decent enough center becomes available that that player pushes Allegretti before the start of the year? Or are they just trying to find a backup better than Golbin to Allegretti?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good question and one that I don't have a great answer for. Obviously, I think the Humphreys thing is a good indication by you. Once you get Tunsil to IR, you get Humphreys up on the roster. And all of a sudden, the depth there feels pretty good because I think you've got a really nice, flexible piece in Wiley. Like, he is the reason that I'm not totally panicking at the moment because I think he can play left and right guard. I think he can play right tackle. He can't snap, but I think you've got good depth there with him. And he's played a lot of football, and he's played well when he's had to play. So that's the thing that's kind of keeping me from, like, really pulling the alarm bell here. But the other thing, too, is, like, you just need more experience. And so, like, that's the thing is I don't know if there's going to be a player that comes available that's going to have a combination of Allegretti's experience and his ability to kind of, you know, settle in, be the leader of that group from the center spot in terms of someone that's going to be available on the waiver wire. So I don't have a good feel, you know, like the market seems like it's not super saturated right now with guards and centers. So I'm just really curious to see how the thing plays out.
Yeah, to be clear, Humphreys in as your like swing tackle, left tackle, maybe.
Yeah.
Wiley, tackle guard flex. Then you've got Golbin, backup center. Togiai is like an interior guy who can play multiple positions. I think when you add that backup center, Togiai goes to the practice squad, and maybe you add two guys. That would not surprise me. They can play center, you know, and then Golbin goes to the practice squad as well, maybe. But we'll see what Peters can figure out there. No surprise at tight end. They did keep four. Chigakonkwo is going to be their leading pass catcher. John Bates, their leading blocker. Colson Yankoff's got exceptional hands, had a tremendous camp. I didn't think he had as good a preseason as he did a camp. And it got quieter as camp went on, which was interesting, but I still really like the player. I like what he turned in on the practice field. He can play special teams. And then Ben Sinnott is the other of the four here that's going to have to get in where he fits in. He's the one guy of the four that can do a little bit of both. You almost can put Chig into the receiver bucket, Bates into the blocking bucket. Yankoff's not a blocker, but a receiver. Sinnott can kind of do a little bit of both, you know, at an above average level.
No, I think you're right. And this was the maybe the most pat group, most stock group of the offseason, right? Because it's like Yankoff seems like he's going to make it. Sinnott's going to do his thing. And then Bennett and Chig. So, or Bates and Chig, excuse me. So like this one to me was like not surprising. And even though like, you're right, Colson didn't quite have the same number of explosive plays as we got deep into the teeth of camp, into the joint practices, like it's the special teams value that keeps him as the fourth guy on the roster. And so like, I do think it allows him again to have a role on Sundays, but then there's a developmental arc for him too. Like there are times where you're going to have maybe a package for him, an offensive series for him, whatever that thing looks like. And can he continue to foster his growth as a tight end? So, yeah, I think that's an easy group. I think that's pretty stock. And I like, and I feels like a really strong group. I like what I've seen from Chig. I like what I've seen from John since he's been healthy. So, and when John was hurt, I think Ben Sinnott did a great job blocking in line. So I like your analysis there. And I, again, this is a group that I have a lot of confidence in just from a depth standpoint and everyone having a very clearly defined role heading into the season.
We said if they kept seven with receivers, which we've been predicting for couple of weeks that they would, they'd have to go light elsewhere. And I think running back is where they ended up going light. We'll come back to wideout, but running back just three: Bill, Rashad White, their third down pass catcher, and then Katron Allen. Now both Ja'Cory Krosky Merritt and Rashad White have actually been hurt. I guess they're not overly concerned about either, because you couldn't have kept just three running backs if there was a chance that one of those guys would miss week one. Jeremy McNichols is going to be on the team, but is going to be on injured reserve designated to return. So he'll miss the first month or so. And I would have to imagine that Robert Henry ends up on the practice squad, or maybe you have a couple of RBs on your practice squad. You can elevate those guys as need be. But what do you make of just the three running backs? It really does put some pressure on Bill, who's been off injured in his career, to prove more durable.
Yeah, I think it definitely shows that they have a lot of confidence in Bill being healthy. It shows they have a lot of confidence in White being healthy, which is something like in this land of like who's injured and who's not. Like, you know, at the top of the show, you mentioned Trey Amos, where we were kind of speculating that maybe the injury was more serious. Like they've kind of shown their hand saying he's going to go to IR. This is, again, showing that they feel comfortable that Bill will be healthy and ready for week one. Same with White. I do think that Katron Allen has shown a very positive running style and can find some rotational work here. But the thing I'd keep an eye on here is like, where does he find value on teams? Like, is he returning kickoffs? Is he doing something with punt return? Not returning punts, but is he blocking on punt return? Is he blocking on kickoff? Because I think you need three running backs active. And the one thing that I haven't seen an exceptional level of performance in is his ability on teams. I'm talking about Katron Allen. So that third spot is interesting to me. Because again, I think his running ability and vision is above average, but he's not going to get a lot of touches. So how does he handle that role as the kind of special teams rotational guy that McNichols has done such a great job with the last couple of years?
His best preseason performance was the first one that they had going back to the opener and when he really had himself a bit of a field day.
You talking about Allen?
Yeah.
I actually think his best performance was Detroit, to be honest with you.
Did you? Okay, I want to hear why. But my point was going to be, I've been largely unimpressed by him, which is not to say I've been disappointed. Like, I think he's been actually very solid. I just, like, we talk about this a lot. This is not a Grant Paulson running back. This is a plotting, very much a, like, if you block three, I'll get three kind of guy. What have you seen from him that you like? And then go into why you think what was a poor statistical game against Detroit was the best game.
Yeah, so I think the thing that, you know, as a blocker, the thing I appreciate is they're a back that can make my job easier. And so, like, when I'm watching the tight ends block, and so I played with a guy when I was in Chicago. His name escapes me at the moment. Gosh, I feel bad because he's a really good dude. But he did a great job of, like, let's say it's an outside zone. I'm really pressing the outside number, and we're in a little bit of a stalemate. Like, he's anchored me down. I can't move him off the spot. He would do a great job of attacking the defender's outside shoulder, so the defender would have to move his feet to set up the tackle. And then once he started moving his feet, I could leverage the block and kind of drive him out, and he would cut right off my butt. And so he was making me better as a blocker by being an extremely consistent runner with his landmarks, setting up cuts, running off of butts is the thing I like to say. And so in that game against Detroit, like that's when I saw Catron do that the most. Like there was not a lot of daylight in those runs going back and watching the all 22. And they've got a nice little kind of old school buck sweep to the perimeter. He's setting up the kick out. He's kind of dipping inside. He breaks a tackle. He falls forward for four, right? And that is a skill. That is a skill that is very, very valuable in my opinion. Now, again, he did some good things week one or the first preseason game. But the Detroit thing has showed me an NFL level, an NFL running back level of vision, contact balance, and understanding the direction and physicality of the run. The other thing is it showed me is it showed that he could set up blocks. And like I just said, like I think that is a tremendous skill. So I actually think after watching him and Henry back to back, like he was my guy to make the team because of that skill set. So Jordan Howard, there we go. Thanks, Evan. Yes, Jordan Howard was the guy there kind of making me feel good about myself. Funny enough, everyone called him Fatback when I was there because he was a big running back and kind of had a slow.
Oh, you're kind of guy.
Yeah, so, but he did a great job making me right oftentimes. And I think there's a little bit of that to Catron Allen.
Yeah, 13 for 34 in the preseason for him, 2.6 per. Yeah, as he went on, he lost the fumble at the end of the preseason.
Wasn't great.
Obviously, it was like a yard per carry against Detroit, but that's interesting. And that's the subtleties of kind of why you come to take command is Logan's, you know, he'll watch the tape and he'll see something that I'm not going to, but yeah, I thought he probably made the most people miss and broke the most tackles in that first game, which has got to the second level. That's kind of what I'm looking for. Having said that, I would have kept him over Henry for sure. Like I didn't have an issue at all with that. Mm-hmm. It was a no brainer for me. I just, you know, I think Bill should get the bulk of the work. What I hope is that this turns into the Jahmyr Gibbs, David Montgomery thing. And he's not quite ready for those lights yet, but I hope that he can become Chris Rodriguez as the year goes on. Like that's what I'm looking for. I just think Rodriguez probably has a little more juice. We'll see, but I wanted to, you know, I want to see a little bit more in terms of, you know, Rodriguez is kind of jolts some of the speed, some of that stuff. We'll see if Allen has that. Wide receiver. They kept seven. No surprise here on the top of the roster with McLaurin, Diggs, Williams. We talked about Burks having a great camp, forcing his way in. Lane was going to make it as a punt returner. The questions on the back end were De'Ami Brown. That was solved. We didn't have to worry about that riddle when he didn't play against the Ravens. He was clearly in. Luke McCaffrey over Van Jefferson. Now, this one's interesting because you can disagree with any of this that you want to, but here's kind of my analysis. I think Van Jefferson's a better wide receiver right now than Luke McCaffrey. And if it's as simple as like that, then Van Jefferson should make it. But it's never that simple. Luke McCaffrey does way more on special teams and was on the first unit covering stuff the last week of camp. He was an excellent kick returner, one of the league leaders on kick returns last year. And he's younger. And I look at their receiver room in terms of layering moving forward. Diggs is on a one-year deal. Burks is on a one-year deal. De'Ami's on a one-year deal. McLaurin may or may not be going into his final season, depending on what happens at his age with his extension that he signed this year. So it just makes more football sense to me to break a tie by keeping a guy that you're investing in who's younger, who does more with teams like Luke around as a depth receiver. If you're going to play one of these guys in week one against the Eagles and need him to go catch six balls, Van Jefferson's the answer. But that's not really what's happening, in my opinion. So that's kind of how I saw this. How did you see it?
No, I think I see it exactly the same way. I think the thing we've talked about, you know, we talked about it with Colston, we talked about it with Catron Allen, is when you're at the bottom of your position group, and I'm not saying Luke's the worst player, worst receiver on the team. I'm just saying like he's the bottom of that group. You got to play teams. And when you look at kind of the special teams portions of practice, when you look at him in the preseason, like you mentioned the kickoff returnability, but he also does other things. You know, he can block on kickoff. He can block on, he can cover a kick if he has to. You know, there is a, he's not like dynamic, but he's a very solid special teams player. And so I think having that ability coupled with, I'm going to say some flashes early in camp. And, you know, granted, it's kind of funny. The same thing that happened with Colston where he was kind of, you know, flashing early. There was some explosive plays. I thought Luke had some similar stuff early in camp. Then he got really quiet as we kind of got near the end of training camp, into the preseason. So, but I think there were some flashes last year too in terms of explosive opportunities down the field. So I think he's a young player. I think he adds a ton of value on teams. I think he'll be up on game day, which is really important. He can help your team returning kicks, which is also super important. So I think that's his role. And I think ultimately that's why he beats out Van Jefferson, because I agree with you. I think Van Jefferson is and was more productive as a receiver throughout camp and throughout minicamp and OTAs. But that's not really what we're looking for here with this seventh receiver spot.
How about the consternation about wideout? And I know they signed Diggs, which changed everything. But that's maybe their best roster position right now. I mean, yeah, I think Jaffrey last year was running routes and catching balls when he was healthy, and he was an important, like, they needed him to make plays. Right now, he's the seventh guy. I mean, it says everything.
Yeah, I think, you see it with the offensive line. Like, if Tunsil's healthy, I think you feel great about that group. You got Tunsil, you got, Brandon Coleman, who can play kind of a swing interior role. Like, Chris Paul can play guard. Like, the dynamic can change instantly with one player. And I think you're seeing that here with the receiver room, because all of a sudden, like you said, it went from one that people had a ton of questions about to now people have these really clear, defined roles. You got Diggs and Terry kind of as your, 1-2. You got Antonio Williams, who's coming on in an explosive way. That Detroit game was so fun to watch from him. Burks, who's kind of this traditional X body type. Lane, the return specialist. Diami, the vertical merchant. Then Luke, who's also a special teams guy. Like, it just feels like a really well-built receiver room. And it's one guy. One guy makes the difference. And I think that a lot of the stuff we were talking about with the offensive line, think about how much of that would be solved if Laremy Tunsil was starting week one. It would feel so different in terms of depth. So, yeah, one guy can make all the difference for sure.
Yeah, I would still have center questions, but your point about the completion of kind of the roster, the whole discourse would change. I mean, you have a top five player at the position protecting the quarterback's blind side, and then Coleman.
This is the thing I think it gives you, though. I'm sorry to cut you off. I think it gives you this. Like, if Brandon Coleman is starting at left guard and Tyler Grady's hurt, like, everyone talked about his ability to play center. What if he was playing center? Would you be worried about it? I wouldn't
Not
be worried
nearly
about
as
it.
Much. No. I mean, so, I would be
and then
fine.
Chris Paul would play center, Cosme bright guard, Connerly, and all of a sudden you're like, but that's what having a left tackle like him that relegates Brandon Coleman to that. Not swing player, because I think he'd start left guard, but a great depth rotational piece on the inside gives you. It's one of those funny things, man. Like, one guy can make all the difference with some of these rooms.
It's a domino effect for sure. All right, let's get to quarterback really quick to wrap up the offense. We're going through Washington's 53-man roster they released on Sunday evening. The question here was, beyond Daniels and Mariota, who they've said throughout would be ready for week one, would they keep three, or would Kali Akmanis, Hartman both be released, one or both go to the practice squad? And they kept Ethan Kali Akmanis on the roster, which is a pain in the butt to do if you're the Commanders. It's not ideal. It's not what you want to do, but it tells you they don't think they could have gotten him through waivers. And this is something we talked about last week on Take Command, and I talked a lot about on my DC show, Grant and Danny. The way he played against Detroit became a national storyline. I mean, Dan Orlovsky was breaking down tape on him on NFL Live. When you have a drafted quarterback and a guy that played some games people saw, even though it was at Rutgers, and then he balls out in a preseason game like that, you turn a couple of heads. Now, the athleticism's limited. There are major questions about what kind of quarterback he could eventually become. But that almost doesn't matter as much as, would someone claim this guy? And if you don't think so, I get that. I'm with you. But how often do seventh-round quarterbacks go in the fourth round? Do fourth-round quarterbacks go in the second round? Do two, three-round guys go, 10th overall? Everyone just overvalues and, they're going to value that position at 140 cents on the dollar because everyone's looking for QB depth. So I guess they just didn't think they could sneak him to the squad. And then now the question is, do they keep Hartman in the building to have four in the program, or is this the end of the road for Handsome Sam?
I kind of think they keep him in the building. I think, and I may be in the minority here with Sam. I want to talk about Kali Akmanis. So we'll talk about Sam in a second, but with Kali Akmanis, like, I just think, like, how many preseason games have you watched, Grant, where you're like, this is not an NFL quarterback? A ton. Right. I've watched a ton, right? You're like, this is like, we can't do this. But when you see Kali Akmanis roll to his right and rip a 50-yard bomb down the field that's overthrown to Antonio Williams, you're like, we got action, coach. We got action. There's a reason, right. And there's a reason Joe Milton's still a quarterback in the NFL. It's because he has all the traits in the world, right? Those traits, you can't just go out and find somebody like that in the street. And those guys get opportunities. And here I just compared one of the freakiest quarterbacks in the league to AK. I'm not, that's a bad comparison, but
I get the
basically
point.
What I'm saying,
did a thing that kind of makes you go, huh, he's got something.
Right. And when that happens, the league, everybody goes, like, it's like, when you, like, you take that raw meat and you throw it out and the dogs are outside, they all go, what's that? They're like, what's going on? Because again, not everybody's got those qualities. And so I think that's when he started making some of those throws, I was like, this is going to be tough. Because, like, even if he does it in practice, it's quiet. Local markets talking about it. But the second he goes and shows out and everybody's like, oh, who's this guy from Rutgers? Oh, that was
great. What's funny
throw.
Is he didn't do a lot of that in practice. In fact, before the first preseason game, I was like, this dude is going to be thrown to the Wolves and they're letting him play in a preseason game? Like, he got no reps. He never really showed anything, I didn't think. And then the lights came on. I was like, he's a little bit of a gamer. It was the second preseason game against Detroit when he lit it up. And I was like, damn, that's not the same guy I saw on the practice field. But they obviously didn't think they could get him through.
And it's the same thing that you talked about. It's like, you know, these all these old scouts, and you've met these scouts on the road. Like, I meet them at the Combine every year at the Senior Bowl. You got the dip in, and they got their notepad, and they're writing down. And you better believe the second those dudes saw this guy rip some of those throws from the pocket with good footwork, good base, like nice arm angle, they were like, oh, my gosh, like, what am I going to do with myself? We have to find a way to get that guy in the building. Because as simple and as limited as the package was, that skill set plays. And there are so many times when I'm watching college quarterbacks for the draft show every year that I do, when I'm like, he can't do it. He physically can't do it. And so when you find one of those that is even a possibility, it's like, let's bring him in. So I do think they would have had a tough time getting him to practice. I know that sounds insane, but I think they would have had a tough time getting him there.
So then real quick on Hartman, you said you're in the minority. So that makes me wonder if you were about to say an insane thing. Were you about to say that you would put him on the practice squad, or should we just... Because if you're going to say that, we could just go to break.
No. So, I was going to say that.
All right. Time for break. No, I'm just kidding. Why would you do something so foolish?
Well, it's so funny. Like, we're good friends. We talk a lot of ball, right? And I know how you feel about Sam Hartman. But there's guys that I talk to that are like in football, like coaches, former players. And everybody that I talk to was like, and we all have the same reaction. And so you have your reaction, which is like, this is ridiculous. Get the hell out of here, whatever. But all these guys...
To be clear, well, I'll give you mine in a second. I'm not that crazy about it.
But. Yeah, no, I'm being a little facetious here. But they all are kind of like, we all kind of are in a, you know, we're getting food after the game or whatever. We look at each other and we're kind of talking through the game. It's like, did Sam Hartman play good? And you're kind of like, I'm expecting to get ridiculed. And they're like, yeah, I think he played pretty good. So there is this weird kind of football cult that's like, he's on time. He's pretty accurate. He's in the rhythm of the offense. And... I've played with quarterbacks like that. You know, there are archetypes of quarterbacks who played like that with less than stellar arms that can just manage offenses. And I saw shades of that. Now, does that mean I think he can go out on Sunday and win football games? I'm not there yet. So to me, he's a practice squad guy, but this is the best preseason he's had since he's been here. And I think that's where I'm at with him.
So it is, right? It should be. It's been 3 years, right? So let's start with that. The other thing is, this is going to, I'm not a Sam Hartman hater. He's very handsome. If they're just going to keep him around to be Jaden's buddy, that's perfectly fine. They could do that. It's just a practice squad spot, whatever. I really don't care that much. But I guess the part that annoys me is they didn't let him play last year in December.
Yeah.
When the season was over and nothing mattered. The whole day is about Sam Hartman. You can't remember anything about that game other than the Bill run because it was so irrelevant. And they signed Josh Johnson off the waiver wire to come in and play. And then they didn't even let Sam Hartman be the backup. They said, nah, if he goes down, we're definitely not letting you come in then, Sam. We would never do that in December in a lost season. We're going to sign Driscoll to be named later. Is it Travis or Jeff or Tom? I don't even remember. But the point of the dude's story is they did that, not me. That's what they told me about Sam Hartman in December. Then they drafted a guy in the late rounds to be the project, the thing that Sam Hartman was, to be the guy that if the plane hit the mountain in a lost season, gets a couple of games here or there to be the long-term backup behind Jaden. You have him in the building already. So it just doesn't make sense. You want to talk about being in the minority. I would never have four quarterbacks. Yeah. What the Steelers are doing right now is a fireable offense as far as I'm concerned. Keeping four quarterbacks on a 53-man roster is a joke.
Is that what they did?
Yes. They kept
They're all on the roster.
Yes. Wow. It's insane. I would never do that. So it's not a big deal at the end of the day, and I certainly don't dislike Sam. He is very pleasant, and I enjoy talking to him, and he's smart, and he talks ball well. But I just think just make him an assistant quarterbacks coach, like end the charade.
So I'll say this. So I am with you, and I was with the team. Like when it got into that late season run, it's like, there's no way they can play him. Like the last time I saw this guy play, it was an abject disaster. Like he couldn't manage the offense. We couldn't complete a pass. The arm strength just wasn't there. And we've watched practice, and then there's been times where I'm like, man, I don't know. You know, Sam is limited from an arm strength perspective, but I will say when he got out on the field this offseason, he managed the offense. Cadence was good. Checks were good. The timing and rhythm of it was so much better than it was last year. So in the same way that AK got out there and was ripping laser beams all over the field, and you're like, who the heck is this guy? I saw a quarterback in Sam Hartman who could manage an NFL offense. Now, again, you said people overvalue quarterback stuff, and I'm in that bucket now. But I said, I've seen enough from him in this offseason, in this offense, with David Blau at the helm, to say if he got in a game, he could do the quarterback stuff, like manage the huddle, manage the play clock, do the things that AK struggled with, quite frankly. Like, if I had to start a guy tomorrow in an NFL game, this is gonna sound absolutely insane. So just, I'm ready for the pushback on this. I would put Sam Hartman in before AK because of how he does the quarterbacky type manage of the game stuff. Now, I think AK has a way higher potential and ceiling, 100%. So don't get it twisted here. And I think at some point this year, AK will surpass Sam in that regard. But there is something, there is some football value to that that is hard to explain to somebody who's like, man, height, weight, speed, let's let this thing rip. Like, and again, like, that sounds insane, and I'm willing to acknowledge that, but that's what I've seen from him this offseason.
Yeah, I just think when they didn't play him last year, that to me was indication.
He got better. He got better.
You understood. Know what I'm saying? Understood. Sure. I mean, you're not going to get worse, to be clear, but he did get better, and I congratulate him for that. They're never going to start him, ever, 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 ever. They're never going to start him. So what is the point of this? Give me a linebacker who could possibly get on teams. Give me a corner. You have three active corners. We'll talk about that in a second.
Like, that is crazy.
There's just some other things that I would do at that spot. But at the end of the day, it really doesn't matter that much, and it's not worth getting all that excited over. But they kept three, and more importantly, Kali Akmanis is on the roster. Let's talk about the defense next. The Commanders put their 53-man roster together. A lot more, I would say, has to be done on the defensive side of the ball outside of the center position in terms of some roster moves. We'll explain next.
At Vistaprint, we know you've got that idea for your business, like the one that nails the trade show, levels up your brand, or makes your team say,
we're really doing this.
But an idea is just an idea until it's printed on
signage, giveaways, custom apparel.
Once it's
in my hands, on my team, out in the world,
then it's happening.
It's so happening.
Vistaprint has thousands of products, easy design tools, and real support to turn that idea into something possible. Print your possible with code NEW20 for 20% off your first order at Vistaprint.com.
Trying to lose weight on a GLP-1? Getting the nutrients you need doesn't have to be complicated. That's where Grüns comes in. One convenient daily pack gives you greens plus 20 plus vitamins and minerals in a low-carb gummy that's easy to take wherever you go. No guesswork, no hassle. Just a little bear that tastes great. Save up to 52% off with code PODCAST at Grüns.co. That's code PODCAST at GRUNS.co.
Hey, Little Bob here. Bob's Discount Furniture has the furniture you've waited 250 years for. We've got power reclining sofas as low as $7.99, five-piece dining sets as low as $3.99, Bob-O-Pedic mattresses for as low as $2.99, and of course, feature-packed bestsellers like my Playday sectional with pop-up sleeper sofa. So stop in or shop mybobs.com to see where America shops for furniture.
Oh, my Bob!
Now open in Vestal.
Chumba Casino is blooming with new games and free daily bonuses. Log in this week to catch the latest additions and keep the fun going strong. Join over a million players who make every spin a little celebration. There's always something new to enjoy. Chumba Casino, play for fun. Stay for the surprises. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T&Cs. 21 plus.
Imagine you're watching the game at a buddy's house when you get a call that someone tried to break into yours. In a second, everything can change. That's why there's ADT. No one wants to feel unsafe in their own home. ADT security systems help keep your home safe with 24/7 monitoring. The ADT Plus app keeps you in control the whole time. ADT's network is built for those game time moments. They have the most company-operated monitoring centers in the industry. Don't leave your home wide open during an emergency. When every second counts, count on ADT. Visit ADT.com or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP.
Welcome back to Take Command, Logan Paulson and Grant Paulson. So the 53-man roster has been formed. We know who's headed to the injured reserve. Those are procedural things that still have to happen. Laremy Tunsil at tackle, Johnny Newton at D-tackle, and at cornerback, and this one stings a little bit, but Trey Amos is going to miss the first four games and go to IR designated to return. I think procedurally what will happen is, because Shai Tuttle and Fabian Moreau are vested, they are not going to have to go through the waiver process, all right? So kind of a nerdy thing, but just know everyone else can be claimed by other teams. Fabian Moreau, Shai Tuttle can kind of pick and choose what they're doing. Expect those two guys to be brought back as soon as Newton's put on IR and as soon as Amos is put on IR. So right now you're seeing three corners. It's actually really four as the technicality there. And I would also point out that Fabian Moreau did not play in Baltimore with 41 guys that were all making the team. So it just tells you this is a technicality that's going to take some time, but as of tomorrow, they're going to add him to the roster. So with those things in mind, let's go through the defensive side of the roster here. Where do you want to start, Logan?
I mean, there's so much to talk about. Let's start with the corners because we were just talking about them. Let's work our way down. You want to do that?
So three healthy corners that are currently on the team until the Moreau addition. And by the way, even with Fabian Moreau, who was signed during camp and is kind of a journeyman at this point, originally drafted by Washington, this is now a really thin, borderline, kind of question mark of a position. Mikey Sanra still got better as camp went on, but I would say was up and down. Amik Robertson had a poor PFF score last year. I actually loved what I saw from him on the practice field physically. I loved Rasul Douglas's camp. He was one of my standouts, five-star players at training camp. But that's the whole list. I mean, those guys and Moreau, you and I kept talking about, well, they need Amos back. It'll look different when Amos is back. I mean, you're getting ready to play, you know, the Eagles, the Cowboys are going to sling it around with George Pickens and CeeDee Lamb. And who are your outside corners? Sanra Still and Rasul Douglas? I mean, that is not the way I drew it up coming into the season.
Yeah. Where to start with this? So I will say, like, the number of corner doesn't necessarily concern me because, again, we've talked about this a ton. Like, Minnesota, where obviously Durante Jones is coming from, didn't utilize a bunch of different corners, right? Like, they kind of were like, hey, you're the two outside guys. We've seen them use other people at the nickel spot in training camp. Tyler Owens, Quan Martin, you know, Kane Medrano, right? Sonny Style. They've all kind of worked in that kind of spot. So there's enough depth there to kind of offset.
Do you think that's part of why that they feel so okay with so few?
I do think that's partially why. I think, like, when you look at this scheme, like, one of the things, like, in Minnesota, I'm extrapolating from what we've seen from Minnesota and elements of what we've seen from camp. They like to be in base defense a lot. They like to have flexible personnel. Adam Peters has done a great job of finding flexible pieces to fit in this defense and can play multiple spots and do multiple things. And I think that's kind of where you're at, you know? So I think, like, yes, I do think that's one of the reasons you feel really good about not having five or six corners in some cases. Now, the Trey Amos thing is so interesting because I hate to speculate. I'm not going to speculate on this show. I'm just going to kind of be a fan for a second. I'm a little worried because I don't understand the injury. Like, usually you see an injury, you're like, oh, he broke a bone in his lower leg. It's 6 to 8 weeks. There seems to be some type of follow-up surgery. Okay, that's going to be another 6 weeks. And then all of a sudden he has another kind of ankle sprain was what it was characterized as, but is it something more serious? So, that's the one that I'm a little bit nervous about because, again, he was supposed to come in and provide depth and kind of a playmaking ability to the secondary that the other two body types don't have. You know, Mikey's a smaller guy. Amik Roberts is a smaller guy. He was supposed to kind of offset some of that. But I will say, like, when you look at Rasul Douglas, very effective in a similar defensive structure philosophy in Miami last year, did a really good job, a lot of picks, a lot of turnovers. So you have people that can do this. You really are banking on that front seven being very good in the same way that it was good in Minnesota to offset this group.
Yeah, I think that's where I'm going to land is they better get home. I mean, you really need your pass rush. Like, all the stuff that you've said a lot about the scheme and not needing great corner play, like, they're putting all their eggs in that basket pretty clearly. I mean, they're really counting on that. The other thing I would say is, in the same way that I compliment and really commend the wide receiver room is loaded all of a sudden. I feel like it's deep. You know, the tight end room, I think, is very professionally, legitimately built.
Yeah.
I think they've done a good job at quarterback, you know, where you kind of like textbook old school franchise QB, stellar backup, and your late round guy that's a fun project. Like, this room on paper is not that to me. This is this is where it landed. I felt much like my commentary in the first week of training camp, I remember, it's like, oh, the corner room is way better than I thought. Mm-hmm. Because there were guys that were playing better than I thought, like Rasul Douglas or Moreau or whatever. But it's, you almost look around and it's like, wait, that's it. They are the guys. They're not just guys in the room. They're the guys. The Amos injury, I think, took a lot of helium out of the balloon for me. In the same way we talked about like Tunsil on the O-line or, you know, all of a sudden you look up and you're like, wait, I think everything looks very different if you're corner one. And I kept coming back to the question all offseason, like, are we sure he's a corner one?
Right.
But he was their corner one, and he's gone. So now everyone goes, like, who is – it's third and eight. I'm trying to lock down George Pickens in week two. Who am I putting on him? Like, who is in man coverage on George Pickens? And I get that the point is they're not going to live in that, but, like, third down in red zone, there's times where it's just got to happen, and you're going to need to cover these guys. So that would be a question I have. Let's stay in the secondary for a second. Safety. Now, this is a room, if I could go the other way, that I really, really like a lot.
Yeah.
Nick Frost, I think, is going to have a very good year. Jeremy Reeves, in what was one of the slower ascensions to a starting role in the history of the league. I love everything about this guy. What a player. What a person. Quan Martin earned it. Picks in his first two preseason games. Had a really good camp. Percy Butler, special teams demon. Tyler Owens, one of the most physical, violent arrivers on the team. Like, he's had just bone-rattling hits back-to-back preseason games. Frankly, one of my favorite guys on the team. I told my brother to get a Tyler Owens jersey. I love that dude. But I like the safety room, even post Will Harris being cut. What do you make of what they have left?
Yeah, I mean, it's not even it's like what they have left. It's like, man, I'm excited about this room. You know, I think when you watch practice, like, Reeves' communication is on display. Like, and I love that you mentioned his ascension, but, like, man, he's playing good football. He's playing good defensive football, communicating. He's putting himself in good positions to make tackles in practice. I cannot wait to watch Nick Cross play football, man. I cannot wait. Because, like, his flexibility, his physicality is going to be so fun in this defense. If he can get everything lined up straight and, you know, they can use him to the fullest extent of what his skill set dictates. I think Quan's had a great preseason, right? Maybe the most impactful preseason of anybody in this group. And you mentioned Percy and Tyler Owens, man, like, they're just special teams lunatics. And I do think that Tyler Owens might be able to carve out a role for himself as kind of that Nick Amonwori hybrid nickel linebacker edge type of player in certain situations. So it gives you a lot of flexibility because I think Quan's got a similar skill set, good depth, and good special teams value. Like, you talked about the tight ends, the receivers, the quarterbacks, how they're like, they feel like NFL rooms. Like, in my opinion, this is how an NFL safety room should be constructed, in this manner. Like, two very solid starters, then excellent depth, and guys that can play multiple positions in the defense.
Before we move on from secondary, I was just thinking about this while you're talking before I pivot. You know who maybe one of the most important people on the team has become is Mike Sanristil.
Yeah.
If Mike Sanristil plays really well, I feel a lot differently about corner. But I'm talking about how worried I am, I say that as someone who watched Sanristil struggle a ton last year, and I thought he struggled at training camp a bunch. So, like, I now am uneasy about him, and I don't really know. Is he inside? Is he outside? If he's outside, is he going to look a lot different than he's looked outside? But I say all that to say, if Mike Sanristil plays at a high level, gets back to that rookie year player, we know he's got the knack for the football. Even last year, he picked off a bunch of passes. Saw that in the joint practice as well. Then corner's probably less of an issue. But he suddenly, I'm not being hyperbolic here, I think he becomes one of the most important players on the team.
Yeah, I don't know about most important players on the team, but definitely very important. And I think, you know, like, when you talk to Fred, when you talk to Sean Springs, these guys that play corner, like, they talk about his ability to turn the football over, which we've talked about on this show quite a bit. And if you think about the things that make good defense or can help elevate an average defense to above average defense, it's your ability to turn the football over. Like, I bring up the Chicago Bears example all the time because it's like, it's a perfect proxy for this, but they were not a great defense statistically. Mathematically, they were not a great defense, but they turned the football over at an historic clip, and they became a top 10 defense because of that. And Mikey's got that ability. Rasul Douglas has that ability. So I think that's the way I look at those groups, is like that, those two guys specifically, is if you can get 5+ turnovers, like that secondary, even if you give up a lot of explosive plays, that secondary feels drastically different.
Outside linebacker, that, so edge defender essentially, is five deep. Adafe Owe, Kalavon Chaisson, Dorrance Armstrong, who will be suspended and not available in week one, Joshua Josephs, the rookie from Tennessee, and Javonte Jean-Baptiste. And you were all over Jean-Baptiste kind of early on in camp, saying he was going to make this squad as he was playing at a high level. What's interesting here is we haven't seen Owe in weeks at this point. We haven't seen Chaisson in weeks since the joint practice against the Dolphins. Armstrong is suspended. So like a Joseph, Jean-Baptiste have been the top two of the healthy guys lately. But this tells me that they think that Owe, Chaisson are closer because neither of them were put on IR.
Yeah, this was the one thing that I was, like, we were talking about the DB room, and I wanted to hold this for the outside linebacker room. Like, I feel really good about the corners if Adafe Owe and Kalavon Chaisson play. I feel amazing. Like, let's go let those guys hunt, let it rip. If they're nicked up, if they're less than 100%, if they're not in game shape, and you're starting outside linebackers week one are Joshua Josephs and Jean-Baptiste, I think they're good players, but they're definitely not the same caliber. So how does that affect Durante Jones's ability to create pressure? Because the whole thing balances on your ability to dictate to Philadelphia week one. The types of pressure you're bringing, the patterns you're bringing, who can win one-on-ones. And all of a sudden, Dafe Owe, yeah, he can win a one-on-one. Dorrance Armstrong can win a one-on-one. Kalavon Chaisson can win a one-on-one. Those other guys that we just talked about, those young guys, can do it, but not at the same clip. So does that change the paradigm here? And so that's something that I'm going to be watching over the next, 14 days, basically, till they play Philly. Like, what are we doing? Like where are they in terms of return to play? Because if they are playing, I feel great. I think the corners, you're not even going to feel them in the game. You got great pass rush, good speed. They're going to get home. If not, it changes the paradigm. And that's something that I think is that makes this conversation about the corners a little bit more difficult.
2 weeks, by the way. You're right. Until week one against the Eagles, it'll come quickly. I think edge is the most improved spot on the roster. Maybe you could say linebackers in the conversation.
Yeah.
But I love what they did on the edge. And assuming Owe and Chaisson are healthy, I think they're going to be really good there. Kalavon Chaisson's my guy. A little bit under the radar. I think he's an excellent player, really good pass rusher. I think he's an excellent fit with what they do here. So I'm excited for people to see what I saw at camp leading up to that joint practice where he got hurt. But I mean, it's just such a different team if those two guys aren't out there. And so we'll see, as you said, when we start seeing them return to the practice field. Hopefully it'll be in the next 48 hours or so. Linebacker. So this is an area where I had 6 on my 53 and I kept Ale Kaho. I think strong linebacking depth often means strong special teams. So yep. I would have had McGee, Medrano, Kaho, all playing teams. And then you could even have Chanel do that or Styles if you wanted to or whatever. But they cut Ale Kaho. I'm sure if they can get him to the practice squad, he'll be on the practice squad the way he played teams last year. Where I would have had one fewer, you know, to have one more than they did here, I would have had to cut someone else. So like I wouldn't have had Kaleigh McManus on my 53. I would have risked losing him, I suppose, or maybe done something a little bit different on offense. Maybe probably wouldn't have kept Togi Ai or one of the, you know, the interior linemen that is just okay. But they kept 5, and my surprise cut, if there is one, was Ale Kaho. What'd you think of Medrano over him, McGee backing up Chanel and Styles and Luvu?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is kind of ultimately where I settled on it. Like, you know, after the last preseason game, I just think when you watch practice specifically and when you watch some of the stuff in the preseason, just Kaho has his range is a little bit better. His feel for coverage is a little bit better. His flexibility is a little bit more.
And Kaho, so we or talked, Medrano?
Did I say Kaho? I meant Medrano. You know,
well, I was going to say, then they cut the wrong guy.
Yeah. Medrano. Yeah. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You're good.
So
they both went to UCLA.
Yeah. They both went to UCLA. That's right. So yeah, Medrano. And I just think when you look at this defense and the thing that like the thing that is valuable is flexibility. Like in training camp, we saw Medrano play nickel pseudo, like in base defense, he's like over the slot, right? We saw him play kind of a rush end at points. We saw him play middle linebacker. We saw him play teams. And like when you're the backup guy and you got to kind of fill in all these shoes, like watching him even in the last game, like I know people like, oh, he didn't tackle super cleanly. It was a little bit up and down. Like he played Will, Mike, and Sam in that same game. And he knew all the spots. So again, like I think that's why I feel like he deserved that opportunity. And when you look at Kaho, like I think that's the thing is he had a really good preseason last year, and I think it was a little bit less effective this year. A little bit less clean on the tackles, a little bit less range, not as effective on teams. And ultimately, it's like what have you done for me lately type of league. And I do think he deserves 100% to be on the practice squad. I'm not saying that. I think he had a pretty good preseason. It just wasn't this electric preseason like it was last year. So I think Kane's flexibility gets him to the roster, and I think his special teams coverage ability will keep him there. I think McGee, we've talked about that, can play teams. Chenault can play teams. Sonny can play teams. So you do have some good flexible depth there in terms of guys that add special teams value. And I think they all add flexibility to the defense. So, like, to me, that's almost a perfect room. Like, in the same way that I feel really good about safety, I feel really good about that room as well. The only thing that's a little bit of a question mark is where's McGee at with regards to return to play? Because when he does play, he's a stick of dynamite, man. He can hunt with the best of them. So if he's healthy, feel great about that room, great about the depth. And, like, all of a sudden, like, it's funny. You talk about safety, got nice five deep outside linebacker. When everybody's healthy, nice five deep. Linebacker, man, that room feels like a rolling ball of butcher knives, man. So it's a pretty cool defensive group as you start getting towards the ball here.
Yeah, totally. And that's what happens when you spend money, which why people have wanted them to be active, right? I mean, 10 of their top 13 free agents before Diggs were on the defensive side of the ball, and you drafted in the top 10 Sonny Styles, who we didn't talk about, but obviously is with Luvu and Chanel. As far as the big three, they're going to be playing a ton. And before long, hopefully, Styles is on the field for every down. Let's go to the defensive line and D-tackle, really. You know, the three of the five techs, the guys are going to be trying to clog up the line of scrimmage here. Some of the beef up front. I actually think this was a sneaky, really well-put-together area, too. When you account for the guys that they brought in, and maybe I've overrated it, but I thought like guys like Cowart and Hurst like really dominated against backups that aren't going to be in the league, and it shows that they can still play. And if they're in your program on the practice squad, you're in good shape. But you know, Payne, who's paid an unbelievable amount of money, $28 million this year. Kinlaw, who's trying to prove that $15 million per makes sense. Tim Settle, who got $8 million in free agency to help stuff the run, just got back from injury. Actually, was one of the few guys that was going to make this team that played against the Baltimore Ravens because he needed some work. Newton's going to be on IR. Designated to return, which means Shai Tuttle's likely to come back. And then Charles Omenihu, the guy that made it in this competition, so to speak, of all the D tackles was Ricky Barber, who I know you really liked as a pass rusher.
So let's talk about, I mean, because I think this is a fun group to talk about. And it's interesting. It just feels really deep and feels really dynamic. You know, like it just feels like there's a bunch of different pitches to throw. Like watching Tim Settle in the preseason game, I was like, oh. You know, I'd watched his film, but seeing him in person, his ability to own the line of scrimmage was unreal, man. Like his ability to like lock out the guard, eat that center, kind of sink a hip and split a double team, stay flat and square. Like I can't remember the last time I've seen a defensive tackle consistently do that. And again, he's working against backups, so he should be able to do that. He's one of the better nose guards in the league, but that was incredibly impressive, right? And the ability it gave, you know, Kaho and Kane to like flow freely to the football. I think about now, like giving Frankie that runway, giving Chenault that runway, giving, what's the guy from Ohio State's name? Number 52, I'm drawing a blank.
Sonny Styles.
Sonny Styles. There we
go. Moderately important. Yeah.
Moderately important. Giving those guys that runway to attack downhill with him in there is going to be great. Kinlaw looks like he's in the best shape of his career. You know, everyone says he's like 305, 306, and like looks like
he does look cut up.
Looks like an Adonis, and Payne is incredibly consistent. So obviously hurt, like losing Johnny Newton here to IR is tough, right? That's a tough one. But I think Shai Tuttle's done a great job kind of settling in there and being a good football player. I think he's going to get elevated from, you know, back to the 53-man roster here. And then you mentioned Ricky Barber, man, and like I thought he had one of the sneakier, like maybe the best camp of like kind of like the not the major guys playing nose, rushing the passer. Like we talked about Tim Settle staying square and being dynamic. Like he brought some of that to his performance in all three preseason games. And so he was a consistent bright spot for me. So I think definitely someone that's deserving of a roster spot. But yeah, that group again, man, it just feels different than it's felt the last couple of years. And we haven't even talked about Charles Omenihu, who has three position flex and a four position flex, because I think he could play true edge also. I've seen him do that when I played with him in Houston. So just a ton of flexibility, a ton of depth, guys that have done it at a high level. It just feels very different than any defense I've covered here for the last, you know, probably 6 years.
As far as specialists go, Tress Way, Tyler Ott, your punter, your holder, and of course, Drew Stevens, going to be your place kicker. He beat out his competition, and that's been a couple weeks ago that they moved on from Jake Moody. So then final thoughts on the roster in terms of surprises or otherwise, I guess for me, I'll just say I was glad that Luke McCaffrey made it as wide receiver 7. I was a little bit curious about that going into the Baltimore game. And then, you know, it really was just down to him and Van Jefferson. It was clearly a decision about special teams versatility, maybe, that gets him onto the roster. Also, probably, let's be honest, the fact that they drafted him in the 3rd round doesn't hurt him either. I think if he was a 6th round pick or a UDFA, that could have gone differently. But I'm glad he's on the team. Callie McManus is a 3rd quarterback is really interesting. It tells you that they felt like we did. Like, he showed enough that maybe there were some teams around the league that might have been a little bit curious. And I am nervous about the corner room. All of a sudden, got some anxiety there. But really, the interior of the offensive line, I remained somewhat flummoxed about exactly how the vision for center came together and what it was and how we got here. Because I keep thinking, by tomorrow when I go to bed, they'll have done something. And now they've cut Julian Good-Jones, and they've kept Golbin, who, you know, in his work against the Ravens last week, it didn't go very well. But I think there will be someone else coming in here. I just keep saying that, and it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, and I think it also shows that they feel pretty good about Allegretti being ready for week one, you know, and I guess this extra little bye before the regular season starts, I think is really helpful in terms of getting him extra work, getting him healthy, you know, getting him ready to rock and roll. So again, if they trust that, you know, like we talked about Owe, we talked about Chase on, if they're going to be healthy, we talked about Allegretti being healthy. Like, it kind of falls in that bucket of guys that look like they're going to turn the corner here and be healthy. So fingers crossed that that's the case, because I actually don't feel too bad if it's, you know, Coleman, Paul, Allegretti, Cosme, and Connerly. I don't feel terrible about that. But again, the other thing too that I have to bring up is one of the things they've talked about, like they've talked about it at the joint, like working combinations with new people. Like, Allegretti's practiced twice. So, like, how much time have they spent on task with each other working those combinations? Like, I coach high school football. Like, that is one of the hardest things to get a feel for. It'll take 10 weeks at the high school level. You know, hopefully at the NFL level, it takes 3. So, like, hopefully they're ready to rock.
Well, hopefully now it takes less than 2.
Yeah, less than 2. That's right, because 14 days. We're right down the pipe here. So,
hey, it's only the Eagles and Jalen Carter and Jordan Davis on the other side of this thing. So it's not like you got to hit.
They're not that good at football. They're not that good at football. No, no.
The interior of their defensive line isn't the strength of their entire outfit or anything like that. For Logan, I'm Grant, saying so long. Thanks for checking us out. Big thanks to producer Evan. First of 3 episodes this week. We are back on Wednesday. We are back on Friday. Again, I just want to remind everybody, I got a live show. If you're in the Arlington, Virginia area, or you just like live programming, the curtains will open right at 7 p.m. on stage. Adam Peters, you'll get to ask him questions, hang out, enjoy yourself. ArlingtonDraftHouse.com for tickets. Thanks for listening to Take Command.
You are more than just a heart patient. At Trinity Health of New England, we get to know you, which can help us diagnose a problem and start treatment faster. Our cardiovascular team offers the latest imaging and device technology, testing, and surgical procedures you'd expect from a national health system, with the personal touch you want from local experts. We know the importance of seeing the person behind the patient, because we see all of you. Learn more at trinityhealthofne.org/heart.